I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. Today I'm with Jim Fairchild of Modest Mouse in Nashville, Tennessee, shortly before your show.
Yeah.
Jim, man, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for coming along.
Yeah. And it's so you've moved your entire rig, or maybe your tech moved
your
entire
Trevor, Trevor Keane moved the rig.
Good guy, Trevor. Okay. So it is blistering hot at the Ascend Amphitheater outside. But we're inside and it's cool here. And speaking of cool, I want to talk about some of these cool guitars you're playing. What is this guy right here?
So this guitar is just an American Standard 2014, I think, Strat, which I got. No, this is a 13, actually. I got a few years ago from Fender. Let's see here. Let's talk about the Strats for a second. This since the days of when I was in the band Granddaddy, this has been my principal instrument. This is a 95. Matching headstock Stratocaster that I really grew to love, and I wanted to get something that was similar enough. So years ago, our friend Brian Watson from Portland put the Lawler Silverface in this instead of the stock pickups, which were originally in it. They weren't lace sensors, everybody always asks, because this looks like it would have been a lace sensor guitar.
Yeah.
It's not a lace sensor guitar, it just had whatever came stock in the 95s. But now there's Lawler Black Faces in here and Lawler Black Faces in here. And then, you know, Trevor and I, well, Trevor basically, like, you know, did a few things here and there, put the pickups in. In Modest Mouse, it's really important for me because, you know, the band is essentially built around Isaac's sound, you know, since, I mean, they started out as a three-piece and it was Isaac and Jeremiah and Eric and Isaac. It's interesting because he has almost more of like a, it's a really thick sound, you know, it takes up a lot of real estate. So unless he's playing banjo, I tend to be playing guitars with single coil pickups because I feel like that just accentuates, you know, what my part of the landscape is a little better. I think there were times where I like experimented with playing this Sheraton, like the, it's kind of a 335 copy, which our friend Brian also made like a wooden pick guard for, which is really cool. And then we put in Seth Lovers in this thing. But if Isaac and I are both playing humbuckers, it just gets way too saturated, you know? And it's like, I think with live performance or with recording, you know, you have to be really conscientious and deliberate about, you know, which part of the landscape you're coloring in.
Yeah.
You know, so in Modest Mouse, I am almost always playing single coil pickups. But this somehow, even though it's newer and is less lived in, has become kind of my principal. It has become my principal Stratocaster.
Oh, really?
Any of the stuff that is capoed, I've wound up going to the 95. And then in terms of other guitars, I really prize both of these.
I haven't seen those forever. The Bullet.
Yeah, and I have one more of these, which I just got a few months ago, that I haven't brought out. So, you know, these were student model guitars from the 80s. This is a Japanese one. This is an American one. Not a one piece of wood body. But this is the creepiest sounding guitar that I've ever owned. I have no idea why it sounds so weird. It's these two single coil, you know, stop tail piece.
And is that three position stock switch. Pretty much? Like it?
Yeah, I think this is completely stock. I didn't know that they actually made wood ones. And this is, you know, I just realized this is maybe a good time to say this. So I bought this when we got done with the Granddaddy tour. Sometimes, you know, if I make maybe a little bit of dough, I try to reward myself with an instrument. And we got done with this Granddaddy reunion tour a few years ago. And this is what I chose to buy with that money as my reward. And I had it sent to Isaac's house because we were just getting ready to start making this new Modest Mouse record. So I was going to meet it there. And the guy who I bought it from, I bought it for $500. And when I opened the case, there was a $100 bill under the strings up here. And he said, you know, something like, you guys affect my life in a positive way every day. I think his name was maybe Chris. So Chris, thank you if you
Thanks,
ever
Chris.
Happen to see this. That was a really, really sweet thing to do. And I love these guitars. And I have one more Bullet at home, which is a red one. And that's the craziest guitar that I have because it, that one has, I wish I had it here, but it's a metal pick guard that, which actually continues up into the back of the bridge. And so the strings are anchored into a metal pick guard. So you have this continuous metal harmonic surface.
Wow, crazy.
Which is actually crazy. Yeah, it sounds like a heavy metal guitar. Like if you put it on the neck position, it sounds like you're playing like a Randy Rhoads Jackson or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then just recently I've started playing these Telecasters. This is the one that I use the most. This is a 15 and there's another 16. That one's a 16.
Is it like an Elite?
This is the Elite Telecaster, which I actually just wanted to get one of these to mess around with, and then I found myself really, really digging it a lot for certain tunes. And you know, this, like, I was actually slightly dubious about this parallel and series selection.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like once you start complicating, you know, this system, there's a lot of margin for error. But particularly when I'm in the middle position or in the neck position and have it in series, it's really cool and massive and creepy in a unique way. So this one also has started to take up some space that maybe like the Epiphone would have taken up before. Like when Isaac's playing banjo, sometimes I'll use that guy because it sounds a little haunted and really wide in an interesting way that the Stratocaster won't quite do.
So do you find yourself like changing songs or changing guitars to fit the song, or do you pretty much stick with the guitar for a few songs in a row? Or
no, I mean, so I make at least the first, well, whatever, the set list gets done, and you know, once we've figured out what songs we're gonna play, because we change the set list, I think pretty dramatically every night. There's probably only three or four songs, yeah, that we tend to play every night.
Wow, that's cool.
Out of the like 25 that we might play at like a closing show.
Yeah.
And so once I get that, I mean, there are a few songs where it's sort of always in a state of flux. Like, oh, sometimes it feels like, you know, the Telecaster is cooler. Sometimes it feels like the Jazzmaster is cooler. But by and large, I mean, each of those instruments, the two Bullets are actually tuned. These are like different tunings. So this is a tuning that Isaac was using a lot on a record that they made called The Moon in Antarctica. And then this one is for this song off of the last Modest Mouse record called Shit in Your Cut. But all of those guitars represent, you know, I guess different, really different palettes. I was going to say different colors, but like, and so it kind of depends on whether Isaac's playing. Once in a while he plays acoustic guitar, so that'll probably be more Stratocaster. If he's on, he has these custom made Wix guitars that this guy Brian Wix makes for him in Montana, like custom built bridges and everything. Yeah.
Huh.
And so if he's on the Wix, I probably will be more on the Strat. But there are times where he's on the Wix and I've been going toward the Telecaster lately. And then banjo, maybe I'll use the Jazzmaster or the Sheraton.
Now, do you know what he's playing beforehand? Do you have to like look and then choose accordingly, or
usually I know which. I mean, he's pretty much on the Wix.
Yeah.
You know, he does play an SG on some of the. So if I'm playing the Bullets, he's probably going to be playing an SG.
Yeah.
And you know, and then I play acoustic on a few songs too.
Yeah. What are you carrying for acoustic?
Well, my favorite acoustic in the world, I retired from live performance because it was starting to get beat up. And those, I have two or maybe three of those. The Yamaha FG-180. From the late 60s.
Right, those are great.
They're fantastic.
James Taylor played one, I think.
Okay.
Back in the day, which seems not very James Taylor, but
they're they sound, well, they're basically Martins, right? Because from what I've heard, Yamaha hired Martin's main luthier sometime in the late 60s and brought all of his training and manufacturing principles to Yamaha, taught all those dudes how to make Martins, basically. So except for, I'm not holding one, but it's the same here. Like those, the Yamahas have open back tuners, and that's the main difference from the Martins and the Yamahas from that era. And Elliott Smith also played those on his first, like three, well, maybe more than that actually, but
cool.
That was it, like his main acoustic. But I retired the FG-180 from live performance, and then Michael at Fender just sent us some of these Paramounts. I have a Parlor one here too, which I just use for like bus and warming up. But these things are actually fantastic. Like, I didn't have high expectations, but it's really out of tune right now. Sorry. It's a really good sounding guitar, solid tops. We had a different guitar by another major manufacturer that Russell and I will both use this guitar. Russell's our bass player, but he occasionally plays acoustic. And so we had a different guitar that had some sort of composite material for the fingerboard and the bridge. And I just could not get myself over the hurdle of, I'm sure that it was at least partly psychosomatic, but I was like, this thing sounds like shit and it feels like shit. So, and there were a couple of times.
Or maybe it just sounded like shit.
Yeah, totally. And so there were a couple of times where, there was one time in particular where I walked over to Tom, my buddy on our right, who plays guitar and everything in our band. But I walked over to Tom and I was like, I hate this guitar, I'm gonna fucking smash it. Like, do it. But I'd never been able to smash a guitar. So I asked Michael if they had any cool stuff, and he sent this to me, and man, this thing is, it's really, really great.
And those proprietary pickups are really solid.
It's big and round, and like, it sounds like a much better guitar than the price point would indicate, you know?
Yeah, this is like the golden age of affordable guitars, you know? It's like when I was a kid, if you wanted a good acoustic, they were expensive.
Hopefully that stays there.
Yeah, that's, so when that falls during the video.
And there's a couple other things in there. You know, I have this 65 reissue Jazzmaster, which I really like a lot. I don't play it on a ton of songs, but, and this just has the stock, like 65 vintage pickups in it. This guitar in particular is probably the only new guitar that I ever pulled out of the case. And I was like, we did put a Mastery bridge on it. That's the only thing that we switched.
Oh, yeah, right.
But other than that, this is one of the only guitars that I've ever just pulled out, plugged it in, and the setup was totally to my liking. We switched the strings to a slightly heavier gauge. Didn't want to change the pickups. Like, there was nothing apart from the bridge besides that. I didn't want to change anything.
So did that come from the Fender A&R rep or
Yeah, Michael...
I wonder if they like cherry picked it to find like the perfect one, or is it just
maybe
off the
shelf? A lot of the guitars that they've sent me have been really close too. It's not that I'm complaining about what they usually send me, but that one in particular was just like, man, this thing sounds so good. You know?
Yeah, because usually a new guitar, it's you don't really know till you set it up and play it for a while, so it's a rarity. So
yeah,
that's cool. I wonder if they gave it a little extra love, or maybe just they got it all right. You know?
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. And then, you know, there's this Gretsch, which it's a semi-hollow body, so it's got the center block in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I use this from, I guess, on only two or three songs that
what model
were from
is
the new
that?
Record. It's the Electromatic center block.
How do you like the Bigsby? Does that stay in tune pretty well for you?
I don't lean into it enough to actually put any demands on it.
Yeah.
There was a funny story about this guitar, though, which was last year on the 4th of July, we were in London, and... What would the shortest version of this story be? Because it's a really long story. But basically, we were like on this overnight ferry, and I had this guitar on the bus as my bus guitar. The truck didn't make it to the show, and we were playing a festival, and we couldn't cancel it. So this was literally the only piece of Modest Mouse gear that we had. And so Isaac and Juan, our manager, and I went to Matt Snowball in London, and we bought a really expensive group of pedals, because we're like, we can't cancel the show, we have to figure out a way to do it.
Right.
And the Hives and El King were like, you can just, you know, our crew dudes were like, they all said you could just use their gear. So because Isaac does use the bar so much, I was like, well, you can just use this. And I said, but be really careful, because he leans into it. And the way that his bridges are designed is that it's difficult to describe that, but there's basically like this rocker system, and there's no arm. So he puts his pinky either underneath or on top of the rocker.
Wow.
So, you know, if he's leaning back on it, then it's raising in pitch. And if he's underneath it, then it's dropping in pitch. But so that's what he's used to. And when the one thing that I told him, because there were no guitars that he could borrow that would even do anything like this, I said, be careful on yanking it up too much because that spring will pop out. And so, you know, we cobbled together the set, literally like delegating the pedals in front of 20,000 people or whatever. I'm like, okay, these are Russell's pedals tonight. Yeah. These are mine. These are Isaac's, so on and so forth. And then after like the second song, Isaac runs over to me and he's like, that thing that you said don't do, I did it. And that, like, this thing is just dangling. Right. Let me get it to do it. It's just like that.
Yeah, right. Springs on the ground.
Oh, and I just broke the string.
Yeah.
Sorry, Trevor.
Trevor will fix it.
Yeah, I can fix it. That's not his fault. But yeah, so anyway, that's the good story about this guitar opening for Noel Gallagher.
Yeah, that's great, man. So that was like the second song.
And I think he may have actually broken a string on it, but you know, the adage is true. The show must go on, right?
Right, right. That's the one rule.
So we did it.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's an impressive array of guitars. Let's talk about these amps. So you're all in the Fender family over there.
Yeah, except for the Sheraton.
Oh yeah.
I'm almost all Fenders.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've played them forever. I mean, that Stratocaster all throughout Granddaddy was really my only guitar.
Now you're Granddaddy, then Modest Mouse, then went back to Granddaddy for a while, then back to Modest Mouse.
Is that and Granddaddy is doing a few more shows this summer, but I don't really consider Granddaddy to be like a functioning band. You know, it's like a little bit of reunion cash, basically.
Yeah. Cool.
But Modest Mouse, I mean, you know, is I've been now affiliated with them on and off for over a decade. And
right, like 2005, I think.
Yeah, right? 2005 were the first shows that I ever played with them. And I love it so much. I mean, that was probably really loud in this thing. I really love playing with these dudes. I think it's...
Yeah, it's killer, man. What a great thing to find the gig that you're meant to be in.
Yeah, you know? And Granddaddy was great for a long time, and that was a total gang, but it just doesn't really exist anymore. So I was tremendously fortunate to, you know, land in this spot. And
were you guys in similar circles, Modest Mouse and Granddaddy?
I think the trajectory of the two bands was actually really similar. And, you know, of course, until Modest Mouse, I think, had gotten to the point where they were probably bigger than Granddaddy, but especially once singles started taking off at radio and stuff, then that becomes a whole different beast. And that never happened for Granddaddy.
Yeah, it's funny how bands will be like that. Like, they'll be kind of neck and neck in obscurity, and then suddenly, overnight, after like 5 years, they're huge.
But Modest Mouse, I mean, they always had like a really devout touring following. And, you know, they sold, you know, whatever, without... But Modest Mouse was... They had always done well for themselves, but it's interesting to see what happens when, you know, you get a single like that, and then...
Yeah.
But, you know, they... I think I can be subjective and objective about this on some level. Like, it's interesting, I think, the way that a lot of people digest what they and we, I guess, they most importantly have done, and now we have done over the years, which is like, it seems like once they discover that music, there's just so much good stuff there. Like, right. I've only contributed to one record, so I can say that, you know, objectively, like, there is so much quality music there that it's like you get a couple of, you know, tantalizing nuggets that you grab onto, and then as you start to go deeper, it's like, shit, man, there's just such an amazing amount of cool tunes, you know, and great words and interesting performances. So, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, but no wonder they're selling so many records. You know?
Yeah. But it, most of the stuff is in the Fender family, and then I've also always played either a Silverface Twin. This is a reissue.
Is this that what are these ones called again? Is it the new,
I don't remember. I have, well, you know, I went out to Fender one day, and so that's what I was going to say, is like, I have always played Fender, and then from that I've just developed a good relationship with you know, Michael and Jason and some of the dudes there. And it's just grown from there, but this is the reissue Silverface. You know, on the amplifier end of it, I used to have a, are you familiar with Trainer?
Yes.
I'm talking a lot about I don't have here, but until recently we had the twin with this, I guess it's probably like an early 70s Trainer called a Studio Mate, and it's got 4/8 in it. Wow. And it's a combo.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest sounding amp.
Yeah, it's a weird combination.
And it, clean, that thing is unassailable, like up to about 4, especially for recording. You just can't mess with it. The reverb is really, really good, and the trim is really, really good. But, you know, it was a little finicky, and it was it's an old guy. And Abe, who's, Abe and I have worked together since Granddaddy. He's been one of my oldest, he is one of my oldest friends from the Central Valley where Granddaddy's from. He's like worked on that thing. And Brian, who built Isaac Sams, has worked on it, but it just wasn't as road ready anymore. So Trevor and I got to the point where I really started to focus in on the idea that, you know, I like the sound of both of these amps. I think I lean heavily, more heavily on the twin in my mix down in front and stuff.
Yeah.
But I really was thinking a lot about, like, and I like boutique amps, and I know that people make great ones, but I like the idea of just having something that you could walk into any store.
Right.
And getting, not only for functional purposes, because, I mean, we carry backups of these, but if both backups went down, we could probably get another one really easily. But I think as you progress as a creative person, you kind of, where that juice comes from, it ebbs and it flows. And there's times where it's like, oh, I need a ton of pedals to like trigger new ideas and stuff. But more recently, I've been really of the mind that like pedals can, anything can be helpful, but it's really about like, you know, what you're actually bringing to things as a player. So I think it's become really important for me to not be as hung up on like, oh, this isn't the most perfect version of whatever I've developed at this point. And so now I'm not going to let that, or now I'm going to allow that to get in my head and prohibit me from doing things. I don't want to be at that point. And I really wanted to try to free myself up. And Trevor and I talked a lot about this, to just like, let's just make things, this is by no means like a simple rig, but let's, on some level, let's make things as simple as possible.
Yeah, because I mean, actually, anybody, like any kid could go into a local music store and buy these.
Absolutely.
You know, which is cool. Yeah.
And I like that idea too.
Yeah.
And so we daisy chain these together.
Comes into
the twin first,
and then
out into the Blues DeVille. Before we hit the Blues DeVille, there's a dude named Nick Greer.
Right.
From Athens. And I only have two of his pedals with me, but this light speed is always on.
Oh, really?
In front of the DeVille. Yeah, it just gives it a little more like...
Yeah, I reviewed that pedal. It's great.
I love this thing. I mean, it's essentially, it functions a lot like a blues driver, which I also have in my floor rig. And it just, I think it's a little less refined sounding than the blues driver in a pleasing way. But I also have a blues driver over there, so I'm not fronting on the blues driver. But I like this thing a lot. We run both of these fairly clean, and any sort of overdrives, I tend to lean on some of these guys on the floor. And then this guy here, this little, actually Russell settings. So this is goes into a DI for the acoustic.
Okay.
And so I'll use the polyoctave generator for one song that I play acoustic guitar on.
Oh, that's cool.
During a certain section.
Are you using the up octave or the down, or is it a...
Both, yeah. So
I've never heard a pog on an acoustic, but it's cool.
It's pretty, yeah, it's interesting. It's a song called The Good Times Are Killing Me, which, I'm playing Eric Judy's part, who was the bass player in Modest Mouse for the first, you know, almost 20 years that they were a band. And he left about 5 years ago, but he played acoustic on that, so I'm emulating his part. But he just gets this part, this section of the song where it breaks down, and I'm not sure if he actually used a pog on it, but that's as close of an assimilation as I could find. And then also Russell plays acoustic on a song that Eric was also on originally called Fly Trapped in a Jar, and so Russell uses that Fender as well, and he's using the pog and this Catalan Bread SFT. distortion pedal to make this. It's almost kind of like a shamisen sound.
What
a shamisen, which is like a Japanese acoustic instrument. Like it, you know, it sounds like a mountain. Like clink,
clink, clink. At first, I was gonna pretend I knew what that was.
Yeah, it's it.
Eric
didn't record it with a shamisen. He recorded it with the shamisen setting on a guitar. But anyway, so that's like our acoustic effects, which of course is. There's not a ton going on there. And then, you know, the Ebow I use on a few songs to get, you know, the sort of violin-ish.
What guitar do you like to use it on?
I always use it on the Strat just because.
Let's hear that thing for a second.
Okay.
Just because they're so weird.
The reason why I use it on the Stratocaster is because I can actually see what the volume setting is.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't ever do it at full volume because it gets pretty obnoxious pretty quickly.
Yeah, they can kind of get away from you.
Yeah, totally. But. You know, like,
totally under pressure.
So I just start. Oh yeah. I'm on the neck pickup, and I'll start away from it. And then so depends.
That's so cool.
Depends on what the application is, but I usually have my volume down like 6 or 7. I don't have it because if you're at, I don't even want to do it. It's gnarly. But if you're at full volume and you're over the pickup, you know, it's gnarly.
So is that why you choose the neck pickup? Is so you don't want to be over the pickup, or is it just because you want that mellower tone? Or?
Yeah, well, I just feel like this way I have the most sort of real estate to mess around with.
Oh yeah.
You know, like so I can be back here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so
trippy, man.
And then I have, you know, it depends on which song. I use it on a couple of jams, but the Strat just seems to be the most manageable and focused because on a humbucking guitar, for me anyway, like this thing will just get, you know, really crazy really quick.
Yeah, I've got one that I never use because I've never really, I mean, every time I've tried it just gets away from me.
A fun thing to do to recording, a friend and I did this one time was so I just chose one, like, so if it's just a standard, like, cowboy chord jam, whatever, GDC, you know, then you would choose one note from the triad and play the entire song just monophonically, you know, and then do some bends and stuff. So you would go through the entire tune and then play the next note in the triad, so on and so forth, through the entire progression. And then when you get to the end, you actually have this, like, string bed of sorts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're processing it differently, right, and it's pitching a little bit, and especially if, you know, if you start going on some stuff like this where, you know, you're like, just, anyways. You know, getting a little bit of vibrato in there. Then if you're doing that, if you layered, you know, a dyad or a triad over that, you can start to get, it's not quite like a Kevin Shields thing, but you can start to get some of those same like washy,
seasicky, you
know, which is fun and interesting.
That's cool. That's great. That's
so
great.
I really like using that thing a lot.
Well, let's talk about some of these other crazy noisemakers you've got down here. Let's go from where you plug in, and you're a quarter inch guy. You don't do wireless?
No, not wireless. Yeah. I mean, I've never been able to wrap my head around, wireless. I can recognize the practical utility of it. I haven't been able to wrap my head around that, and I haven't been able to wrap my head around getting off of wedges and onto in-ears.
Oh, really? Are you guys still doing rock and roll wedges?
I mean, yeah, Isaac and Russell and I are still on wedges. The other dudes have wedges as well, but they don't use them as much. Tom has ears, and Jeremiah has ears, Davey has ears.
Wow. No wonder you guys are 130
Lisa has
dB.
Has ears too, but they all have wedges for backup.
Yeah,
but yeah, I just haven't. I haven't been able to make the transition yet. I got really blasted one time when I was trying them.
Yeah.
Oh. Like they bypassed momentarily the two stages of preventative.
Yeah.
Limiting.
Right.
And of course, that was right when I got the hottest signal in the world, and I ripped them out of my head, and I felt like I had been shocked because that's sort of what it feels like.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, okay, that's it. And Matt, our monitor dude, was like so apologetic. It's like, it's not your fault. I just don't ever want those fucking things in my head again. Which is, I'll probably live to regret or die to regret.
I will die to regret.
So, so this is the kind of rundown of what I have on the floor. This changes, you know, not quite tour to tour or run to run, but there's definitely a few staples, but I also really like to move some things in and out to keep myself, I guess, on my toes. You know, like I want to try to be stretching myself as a player as often as possible. But having said that, like this shapeshifter, Isaac actually bought this for me, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years ago. And it's the Seymour Duncan tremolo, which I use in tap settings. So
it's funny, man. I know you're not in stereo, but it sounds strangely stereo with those two amps.
Yeah, you know? It does. It's a nice wide, and they do such different things. You know, the Twin is a little brighter, and the DeVille is more of like what I would characterize as like a rock amp.
I wonder if that's it. Because it really does sound like, I mean, like a big, wide stereo.
Oh, that's cool to hear. Thanks. Yeah. So, but I use this, you know, on any song that there's trem on. The chorus, I mean, I guess I'm not going to go completely in order because I lean on this Lexicon reverb so much. That's probably on like 80% of the show.
Cool.
And it's got multiple settings. You know, I'm always on either spring or hall and occasionally on reverse. So this is just, that's a C chord with that. And without, that's just
well,
the clean
sound.
Well,
so you're not using any of the Fender.
There's a tiny, tiny bit of the reverb on there, but I've really become addicted to the way this thing sounds. I used to use the Holy Grail and then it started like actually cannibalizing signal. So as much as I liked the sound of it, we had to get something that was, I guess, slightly more reliable. I love the Holy Grail. I use at home all the time, but it wasn't performing as well on the road. And this thing now, I've had this for probably 7 years, and it.
Oh really?
So that's a spring setting. You know, there's the hall, which is a little wider, and then there's the reverse, which I also sometimes use, which, you know.
Oh, cool.
But that's not on very much. It's almost always on.
And you just
spring.
Tweak by hand as you play in
the
show?
Yeah, or sometimes, you know, use my foot to get into a different setting.
Yeah, but, not quite as accurate, but...
No, if I'm over on the left side of the dial, it's easier to get back to the right, of course. For some reason, I'm not as precise going to the left. And then there's this Dan Electro chorus, which...
I've got that pedal. I love that pedal.
Yeah, I have this one, and I also have their fuzz at home, and then just the standard distortion, the red and the orange ones. The fuzz is fantastic. The chorus, I'll just, like if we're jamming sometimes, it's barely on, but it just puts a little bit of flutter on top of stuff.
And it's very transparent. I mean, it really, really is. That's cool.
And then this Ibanez delay is maybe my second most popular pedal in the chain, which I tend to use more like a slap, you know, like if you watch the Danny Gatton lessons and stuff, it's more that sort of thing. So, you know, especially, I don't know, that's what I use, that sort of stuff.
Have you had that pedal forever?
Yeah, my friend Danny Syme, who plays in the band Menomina, he's a drummer and just a fantastic songwriter and singer and stuff. He bought that for me when we were going to go out and do a solo tour. I made a few records on my own, and Danny was the drummer and co-singer sometimes. So he bought that for me, and I've had it, I don't know, maybe coming up on 10 years now.
Wow.
And then the Blues Driver is, you know, everybody knows what that one does. I usually have it more on like low-ish gain. I don't use it for a ton of breakup. Just a little more volume and a little more grit.
Mm-hmm.
The Univibe, I don't play a ton, but if we're jamming, like, there's a few songs. I don't know if everybody thinks about this when they think of our band, but there are, you know, moments where we definitely spread out on songs like, you know, Tiny Cities Made of Ashes and Doing the Cockroach, Dramamine, even some of the newer stuff, like there's one called The Ground Walks with Time in a Box, and depending on where those songs are meandering when we're opening it up and jamming them out, then I might, the chorus is also effective for that sometimes, but I might.
Yeah.
It's you know, different and kind of more watery than, or the way that I'm using it anyway is, it just kind of puts a little bit of liquid edge on the top of it.
Yeah, I have that pedal as well. They're very cool.
I love it, man. It's like, and it's so, it's a beautiful sounding pedal.
Yeah.
Like it really, you don't lose anything on any side of the frequency spectrum.
Right.
And it almost seems as though it enhances every bit of the equalizing spectrum just a little bit. And then, you know, Earthquaker, which they make so many good pedals, but I've gone back and forth between the Dirt Transmitter, which is an Earthquaker, and then also one that Nick makes called the Tar Pit. They're a little bit different. You know, the Dirt Transmitter will do really wild. Like if you turn the bias way down. Stuff like that, which is crazy. I don't use it as much for that. I tend to use, it's real fuzzy at the settings that I have it, so I'll do, you know, like that kind of like, it's almost, when I couple it with the delay, or there's probably better with reverb on that. So it has a real kind of plaintive quality that not all fuzz pedals have.
Yeah.
And you know, Earthquaker makes so many great pedals. So I.
Yeah, that's great. I love that sound you did first. It's like the amp is blowing up.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Like my amp blew up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a wild one. And then the Super Shifter. This is actually a big. I can't actually take any credit for the existence of this being in my chain, because this is a trademark Isaac pedal.
Oh.
Like he, you'll recognize this from.
Oh yeah.
So you know, you select the key. Here.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then there's different ways that the pitch can function. So.
So it engages just when you push down. Oh, that's so cool.
So that's the setting that I have it at. But that's just actually the only reason that is, I love the sound of that, but I can't lean on it too much because that is a trademark Isaac thing. So
yeah.
There's just times where he's not able to make that sound because he's singing and I think it would be too distracting to like,
right.
You know, because you tend to want to follow the pitch that you're playing when you're singing. And so if it was like doing that while he's singing. So that's, my buddy Isaac, that he
covering his part when he
exactly that's, cool. that's yeah. The only reason that thing's in there.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then this dude is just simply a boost that our friend Brian Sowers, who also makes Isaac's amplifiers in Portland, and that's just, it's really transparent, so you know you're going into more of like it's just a dB boost. That's it.
Yeah.
And so it's really subtle, but if I just want a little more going into a lead-ish section or even a section where it's like, I feel like my part isn't poking out as much as I want it to right now, I'll hit that. And the cool thing about this one is you actually can reduce the volume to, like maybe it's like 8 o'clock. It's kind of unity on this and everything above that is boost. So I just do a little bit of boost. And then the depths, this functions really similarly the way that I play it to this Dan Electro Chorus. And that's just, lately I've been using this for any sort of the more like active right hand stuff, just a little bit of top shimmer, like if I'm gonna do stuff that would be characterized more as like kind of classic funk active right hand stuff, I feel like a few players have already really occupied that bit of real estate really effectively, like John Frusciante, and you know, he's done the Stratocaster and that right hand stuff as well as you can possibly do it. So
right.
I feel like if I'm going to do it, then I just want there to be a little bit of extra sauce on it. Cause
yeah.
So I put the depths on that, and there's not a lot of throb, the rate's way down, the level's up, but that's why I have that in there.
Yeah.
And there's another pog over here, which, you know, is, there's just a couple of sections where I'll use, actually there's, shit, I don't have the ukulele in here. There's this tune that we made for the last record. I wish I had it in here, the ukulele, but I have a ukulele. It's a little tenor ukulele. And it's somewhere along the, it doesn't really work as well with this, but on the ukulele, the reason why the pog even started to get in here was we made this tune up called Ansel, and I'm doing like Travis picking.
Oh, cool.
So
that sounds great, man.
But then with the ukulele, it actually winds up sounding like steel drums. So the, you know, the times when people wrote about that song when they were reviewing the new record, they would always say like the steel drum driven song Ansel, and I always felt like that was a pretty cool victory, because I remember Isaac and I were like sort of starting the bones of the song and wanted to just make it something a little bit different. I mean, that, yeah. You know, that's, I think that's the approach to pedals, right? It's like they can really inspire stuff, but also it's like if you're dealing with something that's a little bit stock, you can very, maybe not very easily, but you can creatively take it out of just being like a, you know, I mean, that's a very standard chord sequence, you know, so you can take it out of that pretty easily with putting whatever on it. And then this is a massive reverb, Mr. Black from Portland, the Eterna. So that thing will get you to Gothville in a hurry.
Right.
And then, you know, this, as I said, this Lexicon Hardwire is a total staple for me at this point. Another one of Nick's pedals. This is my favorite compressor out there. Just, it's so snappy. And you can control the amount of squish, so. That really, like, I'm hitting that string hard and it doesn't. So these settings, I think, for the tunes that I play it on, it really reacts in this like nice, almost aggressive compression, but not all the way aggressive, but it will get super aggressive if you want. And you know, that's another one of Nick Greer's pedals. And then this Rat I've probably had for 20 years.
Really? Oh, yeah. That's great.
And it's all, Rats I think are really fantastic with single coil pickups. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you're right. They are better with single coils than humbuckers. They kind of get a little too nasty with them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And just the way that they react to these Lawler black faces are, it's a very pleasing sort of saturation and inherent compression.
Yeah.
You know.
And then you power it all with these two MXR DC bricks.
Yep.
It's great.
And then, you know, this dude, the classic TU-3.
The tried and true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, perfect.
And I haven't moved over to the TC Electronic yet. I know a lot of people have, but yeah. I'm used to seeing that dude on the floor. So.
Yeah. Besides, Trevor hands it to you in tune anyway.
Yeah, he does.
So what difference is it?
He never hands me an out-of-tune guitar. Yeah. Totally.
That's good. That's a good deck.
So.
Well, man. Well, Jim, thanks so much.
Thank
this
you,
is
John.
Really, really a pleasure. And you know.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for, you know, being interested in our band and coming out and checking this stuff out.
I mean, be at the show tonight, man.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. I can talk about guitar shit all year.
It's what we do. Hey, this is John Bolger. Till next time.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.